Hello there. We'd like to welcome you to the virtual kitchen table. We're Erin from Everlearning, Ashley from Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shelves, and myself, Hayley from Taking a Kinder Path. We're gathering for conversations about family life and home education, particularly unschooling, which is sometimes known as self-directed learning, or as I like to call it, natural learning. We'll be sharing our experiences and ideas, learning as we go. We hope you'll pull a chair up to the table and join us. Here we are again at the virtual kitchen table. Oh, it's so nice to be back. I'm Hayley and I'm here with Erin and Ashley. Hello, you guys. How are you doing today?
Hi, Hayley. Hi, Erin.
Hi, everybody. I'm Hayley. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. It's so lovely to see you both. And joining us again today, we have the wonderful Wandering Alice. Now, we recently did an episode with Alice talking about home ed on the move. If you haven't listened to that one, then I'd say have a look in the archives because it was a fab conversation. So thanks for joining us again, Alice. It's a real treat to see you again.
Oh, thank you for having me again. It's a treat for me to sit around this virtual table again.
Oh, that's cool.
Lovely.
So today we're talking about self-care. And I think I mentioned in the last episode that we did that, Alice, you've been my yoga instructor. And actually not just mine. My eldest daughter has been to some of your yoga sessions, and also my youngest daughter, she's 10, and actually she joined us, I think, for a bit of a session as well, which was really lovely. And as well as being a yoga instructor, I know that you're also a meditation instructor, and you run, I think, is it month-long self-care courses in your local area?
That's correct. And, yeah, I do. Yeah, 4-week courses.
Yeah, lovely. And I know that you do seasonal nature courses because I've done some of those. And those courses have journaling, meditation and yoga in them. And yeah, I found those such a beautiful framework for sharing both nature and self-care with my youngest daughter. So and we often use your prompts if we're out and about on a walk or in the park, something like that. So when we were thinking about doing an episode about self-care, you seemed like the perfect person to talk to, Alice. So I'm really pleased that you could join us. So I thought we could start by thinking about what self-care looks like for each of us. So I'll start. And I'm going to start really simple, because one of the things for me is drinking water. I think that's such an important form of self-care, and I really notice that when I don't do it, I feel so much worse. So I have a little jug that I keep, funnily enough, I keep it on the side of the oven because I don't like cold water. So I like my water to be room temperature, or it gets warmed up when we're cooking. And yeah, that way I drink a lot more water, which makes me feel better. You guess, obviously, I like yoga. But as well as that, one of the things I really love is reading, and reading aloud with my children. That's always been a great favourite. And something that happened recently, I was able to join a local book club, which I've been in online book clubs before. But this was the first time that I've joined an in-person book club. And that's, yeah, a total joy. Something I do. Yeah. Getting out to go to that once a month is a real pleasure. So, yeah. How about you, Alice? Maybe you could tell us what self-care looks like for you.
I just love the idea of drinking water, actually. I hadn't thought of that as self-care, but that's, yeah, such a small thing, but so, so important. And you just made me smile inside, because when you said room temperature, it reminded me of my mum, because she would always have water on the side at room temperature. And I don't know anyone else that does that. So that just gave me a little smile inside. Yeah. So for me, I've been practicing yoga for around 25 years now, some periods of my life more regularly than others. And for me, it's much more than just doing asana, the physical practice. It's like a way of life. It's a way that enables me to come back to center and calm my mind if I'm in overdrive and there's a lot going on. So that's something that's really important to me, yoga, meditation, all of that. And also For me, it's very much about finding my sense of peace. So I equate that to self-care, and I find that when I'm out in nature. So, you know, turning off from the everything that the world is throwing at us all the time and just tuning, I like to say, tuning into my true nature in nature. And that's how I feel. So those are the two things. I mean, I love reading, and everything that you've said, Hayley, resonates, but those are the two things really for me that are my core self-care practices.
Yeah, I love to hear that there's somebody else who likes warmish water.
Yeah.
That's cool. Erin, how about you? What does your self-care look like?
So I think I can't remember, I shared somewhere, it might've been in our series of emails before we started, that it's something I'm struggling with a little bit right now, just because of the nature of things in my life. I'm thinking a lot about self-care, and I think it's a word that's become more common the last few years. Like I hadn't really, especially within home education, I hadn't heard of, nobody really talked about self-care in homeschooling that I knew for many years. And now I'm noticing it a lot. So I think I'm trying to figure out for myself, you know, what are the ways that I take care of myself without it becoming another thing, you know, like what's my self-care look like? So I had to think a little bit more about it. And I'm sure it'll sort of evolve as I go in the conversation here, but I think to get down to the basic pieces, Hayley, water for me is a really big one. And it's funny, it has been my whole life. And I didn't really realize it until you said that. But even as a kid, I can remember having that feeling about water. Like really, I've just always kind of had that as a form of self-care, I think. Music is a really big one for me, of all kinds. And you know, it depends on the situation. It depends on my mood, but music and actually dancing is another big form for me. So I think for me, often if I am physical, like if I'm moving physically, I'm more of a person, I think I get into kind of a calming state actually through movement. So hiking, because I really do love nature, and dance because I love music. So those are some for me that are coming off the top of my head right now. Yeah.
Well, I love that. You just made me think of singing, actually. That's something that me and my daughters do in the car really loud. And that's just, yeah, that's a lovely thing. And Ashley, how about you?
Yeah, I love this topic so much. And I hear it coming up a lot now too. I can't compare within the home education community from a few years ago, because we've only been at this really for a few years ago. But I have noticed that there does seem to be more people talking and sharing about self-care and meeting our own needs and whatnot. And I'm definitely focusing more on it, more and more on it these days, and noticing like the positive impact. So I had some thinking around this, but it didn't take me long to kind of jot down a little list of things that I guess I've slowed down enough that I can fit these things in more regularly, because I know it's not always easy. But alone time actually is the first thing I put down. I think I've always needed alone time, just time to myself to do my own thing, be in my own head, to recharge. But I think my awareness of how great that need was has come more recently. And I mean, having young children can kind of point that out, because they're always right there. But that's a big one, having alone time for me. On a like daily basis, I need some time to myself. And some days more than others. So that's a big one. Water, I'm going to mention that one too, actually, because definitely I feel it pretty quickly early on in the day if I haven't started to get my water into me. Moving is a big one for me as well. I wrote down yoga and dancing. I grew up dancing. So I think movement, I mean, maybe to a degree, all of us through movement can feel better. But I think that's been something that's helped me from childhood until now. Dancing right now looks like dancing with my kids. And I love thinking about this topic in self-care, like what my self-care is and meeting my own needs and how it overlaps with theirs, but then also different ones for them too. So all of us moving and just putting on a song and dancing usually lifts our spirits. But my eldest is has that a big need to move. So those opportunities to dance helps him a lot. Yoga. I did yoga, a 10-minute yoga thing this morning. I find I've always appreciated the opportunity to stretch. So when I was in dance class, when I was younger, we would have our stretching at the beginning. So not quite yoga, but that idea of taking the time to get in your body and just see how it feels and move it around. And yoga and movement, I find some days or weeks I need it more than others, but that's a pretty consistent one. And then just quickly, comfy clothes I wrote down because I noticed that if I'm wearing, like before I sat down to record today, I went into the bedroom quickly and I took my blue jeans off because I don't need to be wearing tight, restricted clothing or uncomfortable clothing when I'm just sitting down and wanting to relax and feel good. So I put comfy pants on. And I've noticed that as a parent, that I can be a little bit more grouchy if my body's uncomfortable depending on what I'm wearing. Sleep. Prioritizing my sleep, which can be tricky because that conflicts sometimes with my need for alone time with having younger kids. So there's that. And then the last thing, sorry, this ended up being quite a bit of a list. I really like this topic, but cyclical living, which I mentioned to you guys, and I can share more later if we get into it, but just focusing on where I am in the month and how that impacts how I'm feeling with my cycles. That just over the past 2 or 3 months, I've started to focus on and has become a huge part of my self-care and has had a big impact on just how I'm caring for myself. So yeah, I'll stop there.
No, I love it. I love it. Yeah. Go on, Erin. Sorry.
Yeah, I wanted to pop in for a minute. Ashley, when you were talking about time for yourself, and I realized that so much, especially when the pandemic began, I realized how much I valued time for myself and how much I think a lot of times when I would be feeling overwhelmed or overtired and not necessarily connecting it to having had kind of like social overload. And so I think that for me, being more intentional about having that time alone, saying no sometimes to social things that I would always just have said yes to, or thinking ahead and finding ways that it won't be quite so overwhelming for me. I read a book as part of a book study, and it is called, it's by Holly Girth. It's called The Powerful Purpose of Introverts, I believe. And it was really interesting for me. It just really spoke to me because it had a fair bit of science in it as well that kind of explained some things, you know, that really resonated for me. And I think even in busier seasons where it's harder to have that time alone, or maybe there are just things that happen and, you know, we have family and we have extended family, and sometimes we do need to be with people, even larger groups, more than we normally would. Kind of that self-validation of if I am feeling overloaded, I can name it now. And there's just something about that that is self-care for me, just being able to like pop into a washroom or outside for a minute and just kind of, you know, breathe and acknowledge that, yeah, I've been socializing a lot these last few days and I just need to breathe. And it's maybe not something I can leave in that moment, but there's something about just recognizing that for myself and acknowledging it that is, it's kind of like self-care for the moment, if that makes any sense. Yeah.
I just wanted to add in there that both what you were saying, Ashley and Erin, totally resonates with me, the alone time, because I need a lot of time to daydream, to just be in my thoughts. And I love what you say about saying no, because that's something that I've been really trying to step into maybe in the last year or so, actively thinking about how I spend my time, where I, because I do get overwhelmed. So if I do too many things where I'm seeing people and I'm rushing from here, I get overwhelmed and then I can spiral. So I recognize that about myself, and I try now to be really, to say no and definitely allow myself that time, that alone time, because I know how important it is to my overall well-being. So yeah, that really resonates what you were just saying.
Yeah, I think I mean, it's so important, isn't it, to acknowledge that as parents and as home educating parents, we spend a lot of time with our children, a lot of time. And I think we touched on this in the episode that we did with you recently, Alice, that sometimes that can make life a lot easier. We talked about how the more you get to know each other and the more time you spend talking about different people's needs and getting to, you know, observing as well as the talking, you know, sometimes you fall into rhythms and life can become easier because of those things. But also it is a reality that it is then can be a challenge to find enough alone time, not just for ourselves, but also for our children. If we know that we have, you know, some of us need more connection time, some of us need more alone time, that can be something that is a challenge to manage. And I know that we've talked definitely, you and I, Alice, about getting up early. And that is something that I've done for years. And it has become a lot easier over the last few years because my children have got older. So even when they get up, it means that they don't necessarily need me in the same way that they might have needed me a few years ago. So but it is something to recognize that I think you said it, Ashley, about meeting everybody's needs. That's I think self-care is a wonderful thing, but I guess when I think about meeting needs, that seems to me to be a good way of describing it, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense to you guys.
Yeah, I think it makes a lot of sense. And that's when I first started hearing people talk about self-care. I mean, I guess I knew at the time they were talking about meeting your own needs. But I think it's really important as parents and as you say, like home educating parents, to talk about, we spend a lot of energy and time meeting our children's needs and our partner's needs and our own siblings' needs, our friends' needs, because when we're in relationship with people, that's what we do for one another, to a degree, where we spend time meeting one another's needs. But as home educating parents, or just parents, our young people, and they're all different and their needs are all different and they're, you know, changes as they grow. But especially, I mean, mine are 9 and 6, so they rely on me to meet a lot of their needs still. And that takes a lot of my time and energy. But I think it's just important to recognize and accept that that's this, you know, I'm in this phase of my life and I appreciate being here and it won't always be like this and they won't always need me so much. But what can I be intentional about and what can I be practicing to like have me in a better place where I'm not pouring from an empty cup, as they say. And it still happens. So it's not like, for me anyway, it's not like I figure it out and I feel like I'm doing great at self-care and everything's just that much easier. It's kind of one of those things where sometimes I've done a better job than others, but also communicating with my family, which I think I'm being more intentional about, with my partner, with friends, with close friends. And it's not even about asking for help. It can be, but it can just be communicating. This is how I'm feeling. This is how I think I'm going to be feeling. This is what I might have more energy for at this time, as opposed to this. So just communicating those needs and being just talking about it and kind of normalizing, communicating that for ourselves while we're busy meeting, trying to meet our little ones' needs at the same time.
And I think that's such a powerful model as well for our children, isn't it? If we want our children to take care of themselves and to prioritize their own needs and to be kind to themselves. And I think it's much easier for them to do that if they've seen us doing that for ourselves, isn't it? And I know now that I've got older children, they've said to me before, when I, you know, I, in the past, I remember somebody said, what do you want to do for your birthday? And I was like, I just want to read a book on the sofa. And and my older children said to me, you know, you can do that any day, Mum. And I'm like, yeah, but I think, you know, I kind of knew I could, but I kind of also didn't think that I could. And it really struck me that actually I need to walk the walk, don't I? If I want my children to take care of themselves, then it's really important for me to do that for myself as well. So although sometimes as parents it can feel really indulgent to do things like reading a book or taking a long bath, if we think about what we want for our children, those things are, we would love our children to do those things without feeling guilty, I'm sure, wouldn't we? It seems, it's funny how sometimes we might feel guilty and deprive ourselves of those things when in actual fact, not only are they good for us, but they're also good for the other people around us, I think. And you mentioned that, Ashley, the idea of filling your cup so that you can fill other people. And I think that's a really common metaphor with self-care, isn't it? The idea of the oxygen mask and that you won't be able to take care of other people if you're not taking care of yourself. And I remember there's a really powerful image. I can't remember where I read it, but the idea that if we fill our children up with kindness and with choices and with respect, then that gives them the capacity to be able to pass that on, because they've had their needs met, they're able then to recognize when, you know, how they can help other people meet their needs. And that just reminded me when you were saying that, Ashley, of filling up our cups.
That's really beautiful, I think, and such a nice way thinking about respect, really. Something that I was thinking about in preparation for this conversation was how when my daughter was little, you know, she'd have her little nap in the day or whatever. And then when she, I don't know, maybe she was two or three and those naps stopped, I enjoyed that quiet time in the middle of the day. So we renamed it quiet time and we'd just lounge around reading and sometimes, you know, doing something separately. And as she became older, you know, moving into our own separate spaces and doing our own quiet time thing. And I think that actually, when I was reflecting on this, when I was thinking of this subject, I think that created a conversation from a young age between us about that need for quiet time. And yeah, I mean, my daughter is 16 now and she will often, if we've had a busy few days, she'll say, okay, I'm just going to go and sit today and I'm going to crochet and listen. You know, she's crocheting and listening to Jane Eyre at the moment. That's her time that she is taking, I guess, for self-care. And I hadn't really thought about so much as putting that label on it, but I've always been aware of that need for myself to have that quiet time. And I guess it's just woven its way into a conversation with my daughter through the years, because yeah, now I can see that I have passed that on. So just exactly what you were saying, Hayley.
Yeah, I think that's lovely. That sounds really nice, crocheting and yeah. I think one of the things that I found really useful, I remember reading a blog post a few years ago by Lucy Aitken Reed, I think I'm saying that right, about sites of mutual fulfillment. And I'm not sure if we've mentioned this or not on another podcast, but she was talking about places where all the family can get their needs met. So, I mean, it could be something simple like going to the park. And if you know, your children might be on the equipment while you're just sitting there having a drink and looking, you know, just looking at the scenery. But also perhaps you're a runner, so you run around the park, you can still see your kids, but you're getting, you know, exercise that you need. Or maybe, you know, you go to the library, and we've definitely talked about this, I know, in other episodes, about we have a library near us that at one point they had a Wii, a games console. and they have a coffee machine and they have computers that you can use. And, you know, that could be a really lovely site of mutual fulfillment if you have kids, some kids who might like to game while others are looking at the books or somebody else is on the computer. You know, maybe you get a chance to browse the shelves. I just think that was a really, it was a really good blog post. And we'll link to it in the show notes. But thinking of what might be good sites of mutual fulfillment for our families, I think can be really, really helpful way to think about it. Because it's not always practical for us to, it's not always practical, like you said, Ashley, for us to get up early. It's not always practical for us to be able to do things that are separate from our children, especially when they're small. So if there are ways that we can meet everybody's needs in the same space but in different ways, then that is a win-win for everyone, isn't it?
And I think that it's interesting how like you, Haley, I like thinking about that as a term and then kind of being intentional about that. And then I can also look back at times that kind of happened naturally. And it's not even leaving the house, but sometimes it's an activity. Like one of my guys used to love to Zoom, like he would set up motorcycles and jumps. And he still is a person who I think his primary love language is quality time. So he really wanted me to be part of that. And of course, I'm sure we can all relate to this a little bit. There's only so long that your brain can stay with these zooming motorcycles. But I would find that really, he just wanted me to be there. And so that could almost be kind of relaxing or meditative in a way, because I could just be on the floor. Sometimes I'd zoom my own motorcycle and we're just kind of hanging out. And it's not, there was no intention of me thinking, oh, we're both getting self-care right now. It wasn't intentional, but I can look back at times like that. And they're just sort of these natural things that happen during the day where I think just as humans, our brains come in and out of different types of brain activity. And so if I look back, I can think, oh, there've been some times where there just have been some really relaxing moments that just kind of happen. And they're kind of nice to notice as well, I think. Another one you had mentioned, I think you'd said reading aloud at the beginning, Haley. Mm-hmm. And that's another one where it's kind of like a different type of self-care. If you're with your kids, it's not that alone time, but that can be a reset, I think, if everyone's just a little scattered and you come together and, especially if you're just upfront about it, you know, it's been a busy morning or we're all feeling a little bit, whatever, what book would be really fun to read right now or really kind of cozy to read right now? And I think that sort of introduces that idea that, you know, we do feel different ups and downs throughout the day. And it kind of introduces that idea of, let's think about that. What kind of tool could we bring in to help us with that?
I love that idea of kind of resetting all together, because that has definitely fed into our life home educating. You said something about you all feel busy or you've had a lot and you come together and you just decide to read a book or play a board game or whatever it might be. And it's that resetting and just shutting the world out and doing something quiet. And whilst that isn't alone time, like you say, it is that opportunity to just breathe, you know, and yeah, come back to that zero point. And I think that's really important, especially when you're home educating and you are with your kids a lot. It's important to find those moments. I think Hayley, you were saying about going to the park, and it just immediately brought into my mind laying on the grass and like cloud gazing as my daughter might have played at the park, or you know, that was my alone time. And sometimes it happens when you don't plan it. And I guess that's weaving it in. That's when we begin to weave it in just to everyday life, isn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the whole idea of self-care being something else that we need to put on our to-do list is it's such a shame, isn't it? If we feel like that, if we're already feeling overwhelmed, then the idea of having to find space to do something else is just a real, it's just too much of a challenge, really, isn't it? Whereas if we can find those moments, reading aloud has definitely worked as a reset for us. And also, I think it can be such a connecting activity. And I know for me, sometimes when I'm feeling a bit rubbish, it's not always because I need alone time. It might be actually that I need to get a bit closer to my family. And maybe I've been too much in my head. I've been worrying about things, or there are other things in my life that are causing me stress. And maybe I've been a little bit disconnected. And what I might actually need is more connection. And I think that's definitely something for me that I've noticed. Yeah, I think when I am, a lot of the times when I'm feeling not so good is because I might be feeling that I haven't got those kinds of connections that I really need and want. So it is, like we've said already, there's a balance, isn't there, between the alone time that you need and the connection time. But I think that's definitely something, something to consider, that maybe it isn't always about needing more space. Mm. Because I think we are social creatures, aren't we? And we thrive in relationships. And I know that word's come up already, hasn't it? And respect has come up. And that those things really feed all of our kind of need for community and connection, don't they? And I think that's...
Well, and I think, like... Haley, I really like thinking about that as we consider our other family members as well, because I think sometimes, you know, if someone's having a rough time, we might assume they need time, they need space, or, I mean, there's the whole thing about time out, you know, that's kind of a very common thing that's used both by parents or, you know, different schools or whatever. And I think as we get to know each of our family members in more intentional ways, really observing, really listening, that sometimes it is that connection that they're actually looking for. The connection doesn't have to be in their face. Connection can just be presence, you know, or it can be an offer of presence. So that's the other thing that I find kind of fascinating to look at. What do different people in my life, like, what does self-care look like for them, without, you know, necessarily using those words all the time, but just being like observant and listening deeply. And then sometimes people's self-care doesn't quite line up, you know, if you have different personalities or different needs, but just kind of plugging away at that, though, continuing to listen. And just one other thing I wanted to say before I forget. I was thinking for myself how coming into parenting, I was reading a lot about attachment parenting from the beginning. And I think I at times took that possibly too literally, to the point that, you know, I wasn't having any of my needs. That's a big statement, but I was under meeting my needs. Let's put it that way. Not acknowledging sometimes, I think, because I was really throwing myself into this idea of meeting my children's needs, which I don't regret. I mean, we could have a whole conversation about that. I don't even know how I feel about all of that. But I think, again, sometimes it's acknowledging. So, you know, when my kids were little and we would go to a park, it always just felt so good for me to sometimes think, well, what here, you know, might I enjoy? And like the swings comes to mind for me. I love to swing. And so often you can bring yourself into, even if you're there for somebody else, you can bring yourself into that scenario and think, okay, well, you know, this might not have been my first choice of thing to do today, but what piece here would feel good to me? And that was something that, despite the fact that I often felt I was kind of following everybody else's needs, I would find these pieces. The swing is just one that stands out for me, that, it was relaxing. It was physical and it was fun as well. You know, sometimes the kids would join, but, I think yeah, I think there's lots we could probably dive into around all those topics, but that was something else that came to mind.
I think that's lovely, Erin. And it reminds me, one of the things I was thinking about when I was thinking about what is self-care, and I think gratitude and appreciation are really important features. And I know lots of people do things like, you know, they have gratitude journals and they write down three things they're grateful for every day. And I think that's wonderful. I don't do that. I'm just not good at remembering to do things like that every day. But that is something I do, you know, especially if I'm finding it hard to sleep. Sometimes that's a go-to. I will try and run through my day and think about things that I'm grateful for. And that can sometimes help me from going down a bit of a spiral of kind of negative overthinking. And again, years ago, there was something that I read somewhere in a blog post or saw in a video. I can't remember now, but it was about sort of routine activities that we're doing every day, like the washing and the washing up. And it was about how we can reframe those, make them feel more positive. And somebody said about when you're folding the laundry, that if you think about each item, the person that it belongs to, and how much you appreciate them in your life. And I, you know, I've definitely done that. And if I'm thinking I really don't want to fold this washing, but then I try and get myself into a bit more of a positive mindset, like you were saying, Erin, what can I do that makes this feel better? Because it needs to get done. Okay, it doesn't necessarily need to be done by me, but you know, maybe I want the table clear of this big pile of washing that's been there for far too long. And I found that to be such a lovely thing to do. And with the washing up, thinking, oh, there's so much washing up, but then thinking, oh, you know, actually, it'll be really sad one day if there isn't this big mound of washing up. And maybe that means that it's just me. And, you know, then I will really miss these busy days of having lots of washing up and washing. And I know that, you know, that might sound a bit cheesy, and we can't always get ourselves in that positive frame of mind, I know. But I think when we can, that is such a powerful sort of shift in our mindset.
I don't think that sounds cheesy. Sorry.
No, go ahead.
I don't think it sounds cheesy at all. I just think it sounds really lovely. And it's a very yoga kind of way to be. I know that in my kind of studies, it's about exactly what you said, just being intentional with everything you do and putting love into it and imagining those people. So yeah, not cheesy at all from my point of view. Sorry,
yeah, no, that's totally okay. I think I was kind of thinking the same thing, and it's something I guess I started to do when my kids were really, really young. But again, it's been something that I use that as a tool, I guess, pretty regularly. Not every day, but I would say at least a couple times a week, where I think about how things could be different and how I don't actually want them to be different. I'm very happy with how they are, far from perfect, but it's not hard for me to get to that place now. Of just feeling grateful that that this is where we are, and this is our home, and this is our family, and this is our life. And it kind of, I mean, all the harder parts and all the challenges are still there, but it just makes it, yeah, I guess it gives that perspective and brings you into the moment in a more positive way. And I find it really, really helpful as a parent and as a partner.
I think too, for me, moving away from the idea of efficiency has been helpful. I was actually just thinking the other day, I was doing some, I guess, decluttering, for lack of a better word. We were changing some space around, and I was coming across a lot of like nostalgic things, you know, that I wanted to look through and remember. And, you know, there's a part of my brain that says, this will take you forever if you read through all these things. And sometimes we don't have the time, and that's just, you know, the practicality. But on this particular day, there was really no reason not to enjoy that, not to look back at things, you know, that my daughter had written and think back to those moments and enjoy them, or look back at things that were from my grandparents' home or whatever. And so I think too, not assuming that I have to get into this mindset of, oh, I just got lost in doing this all day. And I, you know, if that's okay. If you have time to get lost in that, that idea of kind of taking what the day brings you, rather than always pushing against it to get the most amount done, has been helpful to me too, because it's not about specific practices necessarily, but it's more about kind of like the spirit in which I move through the day, I think. And I think that's helped me in the way I think about other people too. Just, you know, just really allowing people more grace, more space, digging down a little bit. Like, why is it important that they're on time in this minute or what? You know, it can be sometimes, you know, if you have a flight to catch or something like that. But for the most part, when you really dig down, a lot of these, for me at least, are preconceived ideas of how can I get the most done, which has more of like a quantity feel to it than a quality feel. And yeah, I don't know, just peeling that away a little bit is helpful for me.
Yeah, I think de-schooling is an act of self-care, isn't it, really? The whole idea of thinking or rethinking some of the thoughts that we've been thinking on autopilot for so long, and digging deep into whether or not those things actually serve us and our children on a daily basis. It's really interesting, Erin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and now that you mentioned about like the term de-schooling, Haley, I'm just think it's kind of clicking for me that that's probably why, like through this conversation I've been saying for the past few years or more recently, right? Because I started my de-schooling process started a few years ago. And I think that it has been through that ongoing de-schooling journey where you just continue to rethink things, like you said, and question the way you'd always done things or thought about things. That's been super helpful to lead me to this point. It is a process though. It's like continuing to relearn all of this stuff after years, decades of thinking of it in one way. But I think that's helpful, because when I first started de-schooling, I thought it only had to do with school stuff, if that makes sense, but it's much bigger than that. And it just, like, that's why, you know, we don't just talk about home education and learning, it really is so much of a lifestyle, right? But anyway, that was nice. I just wanted to, it really clicked when you mentioned that. I know you put de-schooling in the email too, and I saw that, but just right now I was like, that's why it's been these past few years since I started de-schooling, where all these other things, all these other really good things and hard things at times, but ultimately good things, they've been really helpful with all of that stuff.
Yeah, I one of the things I was thinking about in terms of de-schooling, I suppose, and reflecting on our own lives, and I've heard it said, the idea of loving our children like we would like to have been loved or raised ourselves is, you know, could be seen as a radical act of self-care. And I think when we live this unschooling life with our children, where we're prioritizing relationships and respect and connection and cooperation, those aren't always things that we received when we were children. So not only is there an element of healing in being able to offer those things to our children, but there's also, I guess, there's also a need to recognize that those things are going to be challenging for us, and that, you know, as all parents, we're, you know, we can be triggered by things that our children do or things that happen. And those things can take us back to, you know, we can be triggered for all kinds of reasons, obviously, but it can sometimes take us back to things that perhaps we didn't receive when we were younger. And that the fact that we were talking before about filling our children up with kindness so that they can give kindness on to other people, it can perhaps sometimes feel to us, if we're not even consciously, I think maybe it's more of a subconscious thing, but if we're giving and giving to our children and then they still need more. You know, sometimes that can be very triggering, kind of, you know, we didn't get half of this and yet here we are giving and giving and you've still got needs. And I think it's a weird thing, because I think the more we become a safe place for our children and the more that perhaps they are going to bring stuff to us, and them bringing stuff to us is not an indication that there's a problem necessarily. It's just an indication that they're human and that they have feelings. And, you know, as people, we don't need to be fixed because we're broken. We're human and we're messy and we have lots of feelings. And I think so on the one hand, it can be a beautiful kind of this idea of the radical act of self-care, but also acknowledging that can be incredibly challenging for us. And in that sense, we need even more self-care. I don't know how you feel about that.
I've just written down, you know, healing by offering the care that we didn't receive to our own children. And I think that's really powerful. I hadn't thought of that as self-care, but it's true. But it also makes me reflect on our parents' generation. You know, we talk about what we want to give to our children that maybe we didn't receive, but did our parents, was there even a term self-care? I don't think so, certainly not in my world. You know, my parents' self-care probably equated to the odd badminton night or something, you know, as a one-off. But in the same breath, parenting felt very different to me. So it's kind of, it's unpacking that, how parenting was, you know, 40 odd years ago, and how our parents managed to find their sort of moments of self-care. I don't know. It's an interesting, yeah, I don't quite know how to unpack that yet, but you're making my mind explore that.
Yeah, I think self-care is kind of a trendy thing at the moment, isn't it? It's very, I think we alluded to that at the beginning. It's something that seems to be everywhere. And I think self-care is, I think one of the, I mean, I think it's, you know, it's been, the term has been around for a while. And I think, you know, it goes back to things like the civil rights movement and even beyond that. And, you know, again, that was about perhaps people who were denied their basic rights, the fact of actually caring for yourself and seeing yourself as worthy when the world perhaps is telling you that you're not, is a very powerful and radical thing to do, isn't it? And not only could it help sustain you in terms of your political activities and caring for other people, but just in that very, yeah, embodying that and being able to see yourself as lovable, even when that's not reflected to you from other people, is massive, isn't it? It's a really powerful thought.
Mm-hmm. If I think about, so my kids would come to their own self-care more naturally than I come to mine. Kind of some of the things you had said, Haley, even just about, you know, mom, you can read any day, like, you know, just really kind of helping you recognize those things. So what I see in my kids is that they have a very good sense of themselves and what they each need individually. And I do think that they recognize that it's a bit harder for me. Like, I do think they will say things or they will do things that kind of indicate that to me, which is actually very gracious. It's very, you know, I find it they're very generous that way. And I'm going to try, I'm not exactly sure what I'm saying here, so just bear with me. But it's like, we want our children to respect themselves. We want them to understand, you know, their worth and what's important for them as individuals. And so I very much feel that. And I'm always really, you see examples of it, and it's very heartening to see our kids recognizing their own needs and asking for what they need or making a decision that's in line with who they are. And I think the work for me has been to be really careful not to step on that or undo it, because you know, as you're saying, Alice, I think, first of all, times have changed. So this idea of us even paying attention to ourselves really as individuals is quite different than it was in decades past. So when I see my kids doing things that are very good for them, and they're really making their own decisions, and they are being assertive in polite ways, just choosing to say no to things or saying yes to part of something, but, you know, not losing themselves in it and doing everything, you know, that somebody asks them to do or whatever. It's very, my gut is to be triggered by that. You know, what do you mean you're taking a second day off work? Are you sure you still have that cough or whatever? Like that's where my brain goes. And I have to really, I have to just really be cautious of it because I wanted this for them. You know, I wanted them to be able to take care of themselves. And so I can't project my own stuff onto them. It's we want things for our kids, but sometimes that step of supporting them in maintaining that sense of self-care is actually very complicated for me, at least. For me, it is. Yeah.
I think there's a fear. One of the kind of fears that people have about unschooling is that children are going to be selfish and that because we're aiming to meet their needs and because we're encouraging them to follow their passions and to direct their own learning or to, you know, we're all about respecting what it is that they're interested in. And so I think there is a worry about unschooling that might mean that children turn out to be selfish. Whereas I don't feel that because I feel very much like we were talking about before, that in order for people to be able to respect other people's needs, I think it helps for them to have had their needs met. And I think when we think about, you know, human babies being kind of helpless and, you know, babies come into the world designed to be in relationship with us and to connect with us. And they need us at that point to meet their every need, don't they? And as they get older, then obviously they can take more and more responsibility for that. And I feel like because unschooling is so much for me about respect and relationships, I don't see that selfishness in my children. They're not perfect. And obviously sometimes they will be selfish. You know, sometimes we all are, but I definitely do see a sense of them caring about other people's needs and, you know, which I guess is reflected in them saying, you know, you can read your book, Mum, you don't have to wait for your birthday. So yeah, I think there are a lot of things there, Erin, aren't there? There are a lot of, a lot of things about our own feelings and a lot of things about what other people might expect or assume about unschooling and about self-care.
Yeah, I kind of want to jump in because I'm realizing that I said something earlier, which I forget exactly how I put it, but I think I was mentioning how my kids are younger, so they still need me quite a lot, which is true in a lot of ways. But in listening to what you guys just shared, I'm also really being reminded of how children are really good a lot of times at meeting their own needs. So even when they need us a lot for certain things, even Haley, how you said, like the fact that the infant is not like designed to know that they need to be taken care of by the person they're attached to, right, is pretty amazing when you think about it. And I quickly jotted down a couple of examples that I could, like, off the top of my head as to how my kids, and Erin, you mentioned observation earlier, which I think is so key here, because it's been through all the time we've spent together and me really slowing down, as I always mention, to have the time to really observe my children over time to see these things. Like my eldest has always been, and I didn't recognize this for years, but he's always been really good at just meeting a lot of his own sensory needs. It wasn't me teaching him, thinking I know better and I have more experience and I've I mean, how, I don't know, he knows his needs better than I do. He's feeling and experiencing those needs. And sensory is one, like his need to move, his need to spin, his need to bounce, his need to climb, his need to go fast, you know, whatever it may be. And it's changed over the years. He's just done these things. Like he was the 3-year-old climbing the couches, meeting that sensory need on his own. And maybe this is the other point I want to make. Maybe us as the parents or the adults getting in their way when they're trying to meet their needs, which has been a big lesson for me. Today, actually, as an example, I can speak to both my kids quickly. Like my eldest, I could see it in his face. He's just really tired, didn't have a lot of energy, seemed like he might be fighting something off because my youngest has a cold that he's getting over. And I was kind of pushing him a little bit to like get up and get going, like, come on, let's go. Cause I was feeling pretty good myself. So I was like, come on, let's go. And he was really like putting on the brakes and I was like, you know, not letting go. And eventually, finally, I let go and then everything just fell into place. And he's been resting very much in bed a lot today. And he's now, and I can, because of these types of conversations, can just lean into the trust that he's meeting needs that maybe aren't as visible to me. But when I look in his face, he's pale, he looks tired. And then I had a need to get out, which I can leave my oldest to rest at home to, you know, if I just want to walk the dog, because there's another one who has needs that I'm trying to meet. I'm trying to get the dog out for a walk. But my youngest, I thought he would be, you know, content to come with me, and he wasn't in that moment. So it was like conflicting needs where I'm feeling I really want to get out. It's a sunny day. The dog, you know, was excited to go for a walk, and my youngest was like, I don't want to go for a walk. And I tried to push a bit, you know, I tried to like, oh, come on, it'll be okay. And he really just was like, no, I really don't want to go. And so I didn't go, and I'll go later. But so there's that, you know, choosing to say no. I think Aaron, you said that, right? Like he felt, no, I don't actually need or want to go for a walk right now. But our children are really good at meeting their needs. And because we're all unique people, all our needs are different. I won't go into this long, but that's where I find that the 7 types of rest that I've shared before helpful in thinking about my own needs, but especially all of my family members' needs and how, you know, there's these different types of rest. And what made me think of it now is I was going to mention creative rest. You know, there's some children who just spend hours creating. These are not my kids. My kids are not like this. But there's some kids who just, not art projects, but you know what I mean? Like they get the paint out and they're just making things and they're creating in that type of creative way. My kids would do it more so with like Lego or creating in Minecraft. So it's not to say they don't enjoy creative rest, but my point being, how we feel rested and how we meet our own needs is just so individual, and that children are actually really good, at meeting their needs, but that the 2 things that came, like that you guys were talking about, like how we were treated, respected or not respected as much in meeting our own needs as children, we're triggered by that. And then I'm very much so impacted by listening to other parents talk about the expectations they have on their children and knowing that that doesn't align with where I'm at with my children. And I have to be very mindful of how much of that I'm around, because then it's very easy for me to start feeling like, oh, you know, maybe he shouldn't be resting today. Maybe I should have pushed him a bit further. But like you said, Haley, I know when I'm being true to myself that that's not actually what I believe. And I'd rather lean on trusting that they, that they're meeting their own needs in those moments. Sorry, that was a lot.
No, and it just made me think, Ashley, I had forgotten, but something I was thinking about leading up to today, you were talking about input from other people. And I was thinking around self-care input. Yes, input from other parents, input from what I choose to read or listen to or watch. That just kind of looped me back around to that, I do think that that's a piece of it too, is not feeling compelled or obligated to take in every piece of whether it's advice from another parent, or even sometimes if we're in a kind of a vulnerable place, sometimes even hearing other people's conversation that feels a little bit triggering to us, we can choose not to surround ourselves with that. And I think, you know, media has been a big piece for me. How much news do I actually need to hear? And what is the should around that? You know, what's the balance between being a well-informed citizen versus my mental health, right? And just how I'm feeling going to sleep at night. So I've played a lot with that idea of external input. That sounds funny, but I think you know what I mean. Alice, I have a question for you I'm curious, because you engage with people around self-care. Are there themes that come up from people that you notice around, I guess by the time people connect with you, they're really thinking about taking care of themselves and they're thinking about their own needs. So maybe not, but do you notice things, if it's comfortable to share, that common themes for people kind of having any difficulty getting into that place of really, kind of giving themselves that space?
Yeah, I think that people need permission. They need that invitation, and then they need that permission that it's okay to have that time to themselves. That's what I see. And the recurring theme of just needing space away. You were just actually talking about external things. And that definitely plays a massive part. People want to log off. They want to put their phones down. They want to. A lady actually just at the weekend, who's on one of my nature courses at the moment, said that she went to the library and got out poetry books instead of crime novels, because she decided that she wanted to put something else in. And I think that's really important. I think because we are swamped so much in the world with so much external, the new, you know, everything's thrown at us all the time, if we allow it to be, that I think it's really important to take that step back and be intentional about what we allow in. But definitely I see that people just need that invitation, and they need that permission to step back from everything and to come back into themselves. And that is a theme that I see frequently with people on my nature courses and in my yoga classes. It's a very, recognized, that kind of thing. And I feel very strongly about that. You know, I haven't had a TV since my daughter was a baby. And of course, I know we don't need a TV now. We have computers and that. And I do keep up to date with things, but I certainly, the news is not in my ear more than maybe checking every day or two a few headlines. And I think it's really important what we put in. I think it's actually a huge part of our self-care in this world. And it's important to, when I say restrictions, I don't know if that's the right word, but yeah, but you were actually saying at the beginning, Erin, about saying no. I think we can say no in more ways than just saying no to going on an activity or something. We can also say no by what we allow into our space from the online world or anywhere. So yeah, I definitely see that as a theme. People are feeling that there's a lot of noise and they need to step back from that. That's what I see.
Mm-hmm. And I think that it's interesting, because there are times that it's almost the flip of that, where I will find myself really diving into certain issues in the news or certain things that have happened. And that's like another kind of permission I think I have to give myself, that, gosh, I've been spending hours reading about this situation or this incident, but, you know, there's something in me that wants to understand something, you know, really well. And so it's kind of that permission in either way. And that word permission, Alice, makes me think about how much as a kid I would, and I think this goes back sometimes to the introverted thing, I would just feel like I desperately needed a break from school. And, you know, just the slightest scratch of a throat, I would be, maybe I'm sick, maybe I'm whatever. And I can remember having these dialogues with myself around, was I, you know, maybe I could go for the afternoon. Am I really that sick? Am I really? And it just makes me think about how crisis often gives people a permission to come to a place of self-care. Physical illness gives people permission. An external event, like an appointment or moving or something like that. But to just say, to just have permission to take care of yourself and say no to things, I think is probably hard for many of us, but I would bet it was very hard. I bet we didn't have that permission as children to take that space ahead of time before you get really sick, right? Before you have a breakdown.
That really is definitely is something that I've experienced. I was quite poorly about 18 months ago, and I was dealing with grief and I became quite ill, and it took me reaching rock bottom to actually acknowledge that I needed to put myself first. And something that we've been talking about tonight is observing in our children. And I wrote it down in my notebook that, you know, my daughter doesn't feel guilt to take time out and say, I've had a busy few days. Now I need to sit and I need to crochet and listen to an audiobook. She doesn't feel guilt about that. Whereas, you know, I have, and I needed that kick to bring me back to that point where I was like, okay, I need to stop and I need to take care of myself. But I think that's what we are teaching our children, isn't it? We're teaching them to not reach that point, and therefore they don't feel guilt. And another thing that we touched on about, especially kids that are unschooled, you know, feeling, I've lost my train here, feeling selfish. And I don't see that myself. In fact, I see that with my daughter, this is just my experience, by having that awareness of being able to take that step back, you could see that as selfish, but actually I think it makes her more aware of that need and therefore more compassion for other people in that situation. So those are all the thoughts that are spinning in my mind as you say that. I think it's, yeah, maybe it's our generation and like you say, how we've been raised. You know, did anybody say to me as a child, do you need some time for some self-care? You went on, you went to school, you did everything that you were meant to do. And so maybe that's why I've had issues with having to stop. And I think that's, you know, for me, where my yoga comes in is that gives me that moment to stop. And during that time that I was ill, actually, the only thing that I could continue doing during those months was a very slow kind of yoga, yin yoga, because I found it very healing and very, but that was all I could do. But it did take a lot for me to reach that point. And I see that with a lot of my, you know, with students, I see that with people, they need that permission to stop. Maybe it's a generational thing. Maybe it's a culture thing. I'm not really sure, but that's what I've experienced.
I love so much of what you were saying, Alice, and also what you were saying, Ashley, about your observing in your children that they move when they need to move, and that you've seen that. And one of the things I was been thinking about a lot recently is this whole idea of you change your thoughts, then you change your behavior, or do you change your behavior and then you change your thoughts? And it's interesting with yoga and meditation, I think our bodies, you know, our behavior and our thoughts are so kind of connected, aren't they? And I think it is good sometimes to be able to change your thoughts, and then that will change your behavior. But sometimes we're not able to do that. And I think that's one of the beautiful things about movement. And I think everybody has mentioned the importance of movement. And you saying, Alice, about wondering why, why we're not able to give ourselves that permission, and being able to contrast that with this idea of Ashley's children moving around so beautifully. I kind of love that idea, Ashley, that they are so in tune with their, what, listening to their bodies, I guess. That's what I'm hearing you say, that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, but and I think it, oh, sorry, Hayley.
Well, no, I was just going to say, I wondered what you thought about this whole idea of whether, it, you know, it comes from our bodies first or our thoughts first, which are,
Yeah, I think, well, just listening to you there, it led me to the thing we've probably mentioned on here before about how, as parents, it's really helpful to remember that when our children are behaving a certain way, you know, maybe in a desirable or undesirable behavior, it's communication to us. So I don't know if they're just listening to their bodies. I think they are a lot of the time, but sometimes I think it's about their mind and their thoughts and their curiosities and something that they're wanting to focus on and for a reason. And sometimes that it just is some type of rest and that it's helpful. Again, going back to that idea of taking the time to observe them and really get curious about how they're spending their time and what they're doing, is really helpful. But I really love this piece about, the permission and the acceptance and how, I really want to prioritize that with my kids so that, like what you're saying, Alice, your daughter just doesn't have that guilt that I absolutely feel. Oh, even though I know this stuff, that guilt is just still a feeling there. You can't just shut it off and make it go away once you know this stuff. So it's such a gift to give that to our children. So sorry, Hayley, I'll stop because I think I'm trailing away now from your question, which it was a really good one about, is it behavior or thoughts, but I think it's pretty complex, which I think is important to remember.
I think it's also interesting that I think when people think self-care, probably because we're thinking often as parents, I think most people's minds go to rest. But then Ashley, as you're talking too, it's potentially we have the tendency to stop children from kind of both ends of self-care, right? Really digging into something and expending energy, whether that's physical or whether that's really getting engaged in kind of one thing for a period of time. And then on the flip side, it's kind of like, we don't want them to rest too much either. I'm saying we in a societal way. So it's interesting how there feels to me like there's this kind of little space in the middle that everybody's comfortable. As long as they're not moving too much and too loud and too vocal, but not resting too much. And, you know, it's just a funny thing, right? That really self-care is so many pieces of that spectrum. It's just about being where you need to be in that moment. And, you know, people just have a lot to say about it, which can make it tricky. And I think kind of stops us up in the ways we've been talking about. So this is so amazing to me just to hear all these different ideas and different kids who, you know, not none of us are perfect, obviously, but we're all invested in listening to them and observing and really just trying to respect what it means for each of them.
And maybe it's also just about, like we did at the beginning of this meeting, just coming back to a central point, just coming back to ourselves, and we're modeling that for our children all the time. And maybe it really is just as simple as that, really, deep down at the bottom of it all. It's just about being in our everyday life, and just, you know, when we feel overwhelmed or anything like that, we just bring ourselves back to that point. And we model that for our children. And that's, I think, how I see it. You know, after all of the conversation, I think, yeah, that's it. It's just listening to ourselves. And that means coming back to ourselves and just taking that breath wherever we are in the day, whatever we're doing.
Mm. Yeah, Alice led us in a beautiful, mindful moment before we started recording. Where we'd all been quite busy, and she gave us a few moments to just take some deep breaths and led us to kind of arrive here at this podcast. And we really appreciate that, Alice. Thank you. We've covered so many things, and I think we could go on talking for so long because there are so many different aspects that we've looked at. And I think self-care is such a personal thing, isn't it? But I did want to take a moment, Alice, to ask you if you could remind our listeners where we could find you online to hear more about your nature courses and your lovely yoga and meditation.
Oh, thank you, Hayley. Yes, so you can find me at alicegriffin.co.uk. You can sign up for my newsletter there, and there's lots of information on my website about my yoga offerings and my Slow Into the Seasons. So it's a course for every season of the year. So the idea is it's a kind of calm companion. So in those courses, I offer my yoga, my meditation, journaling prompts, and we get together once a month and just share that space. So yeah, it's all there. And you can find me at Wandering Alice Griffin on Instagram and Facebook.
Well, thank you, Alice. We'll put those links in the show notes. And thank you very much for chatting to us again. Aww. It's been a real pleasure. And thank you, Erin and Ashley. It's lovely to see you both. And thank you to everybody listening. We appreciate you all. And we will see you again soon. Okay. Bye, everybody.
Thanks, Hayley.
Thank you so much.
And this ends our conversation today. We hope you found it interesting and helpful. If you'd like to connect further or see additional content, Erin can be found on the web and on Instagram at Everlearning. Ashley can be found on Instagram at Ashley as Mama and Storytime Shells. And I, Hayley, can be found on the web and on Instagram at Taking a Kinder Path. We'd love it if you'd share this conversation with anyone you think might like it. And if you've enjoyed this episode, maybe you'd consider leaving us a review. We'd love to hear your thoughts. We're so grateful you made time in your day to listen to us chat. Thanks so much for listening.